Germany, Jekyll and Hyde, was a critical success. There were even questions in the House of Commons as to why the author of such an important work was still interned. My father was one of the first internees to be released in August 1940, arriving in London on the night of the first air raid on the city. On September the 9th, 1940, Hans Lothar, also a liberal German journalist, and my father sent a Memorandum on die Zeitung to the Foreign Office, proposing that the government subsidize the publication of a German-language paper for emigrants. It appears that the idea came from Lothar, who also became editor-in-chief, while my father became its main political commentator. Although the paper was primarily aimed at German emigrants, it was also intended to be airdropped over Germany. At that time, my father dreamed of forming a German exile faction like the Free French, which would help the Allies and eventually play a role in rebuilding Germany after the war. My father left Die Zeitung after 16 months because of internal differences, perhaps also because he saw that his dream would not become reality. A little later, David Astor invited him to work for The Observer. This offered the opportunity to influence British policy far more directly than with Die Zeitung. My father used to say that at The Observer he became a virtual Englishman. He learned to write a beautiful, clear English and analysed events from the British point of view. He rose rapidly, and from 1942 onward wrote most of the editorials and many policy articles under various pseudonyms. It would not be an exaggeration to say that he determined the paper's political line. David Astor himself was in the army and could not play a part in the normal running of the paper. By the late 40s, the name Sebastian Haffner was very well known and respected in British journalism. In the early 1950s, political differences with David Astor arose, and in order to stay with The Observer but avoid conflict, my father returned to Germany as a foreign correspondent. Generously, the paper continued to pay him his full salary. He sent reports back to London, but also made occasional forays into the German press and television. Gradually these became more frequent, and he became quite well known in his own country as a British journalist. He left The Observer in 1961 over differences in policy toward the Soviet Union in general and the British stance on Berlin in particular. A year later he began to write a series of popular political columns in Stern magazine. These, and further television appearances, made him really famous. He could no longer travel by train or bus in Germany without being accosted by name and drawn into political discussions. For Stern, he also wrote features on historical topics, such as why Germany had lost the First World War, or the abortive 1919 revolution in Germany. These were subsequently published as books, which were widely read and translated. In 1978, a publisher asked him to write a short book on Hitler. This he did, with the title Anmerkungen zu Hitler, Notes on Hitler. The book was an outstanding success and sold nearly 1 million copies. It was translated into English as The Meaning of Hitler, a title he did not like, and many other languages. In the 1980s, he continued to write books on history, but age was beginning to creep up on him. Reunification in 1989 found my father a sick and weary man. He was profoundly uneasy about the way in which East Germany was annexed, and worried about the stability of Eastern Europe, especially the Balkans. The article in which he expressed his concerns was almost his last. It ran against the grain of the general euphoria of the time, and was not well received, but it showed once again his sound instinct and political foresight. After 1990, he became progressively weaker and stopped writing altogether. He was frail and housebound, his main pleasure intellectual discussions about history, the world, and the politics of his short century, 1914 to 89. He was not much given to personal reminiscence, but he did refer to the manuscripts that he kept in a side cupboard of his desk. He was particularly keen on one of his early novels, which he thought showed signs of talent. He suggested I should go through his papers after his death, but forbade me to read any of them during his lifetime. When he died, in January 1999, I started looking through the manuscripts, mainly searching for the novel. It was not among the papers in his desk, but later turned up, serendipitously, hidden in a chest of drawers. While searching for the novel, I stumbled across the manuscript of this book. It came as a complete surprise. I was immediately fascinated by it and read it in a single sitting, but I was unsure whether my interest was due to personal involvement, so I gave it to a German journalist friend, Uwe Sukop, to read. He was equally enthusiastic, and that convinced me to publish it in Germany. There were, however, two large gaps in the manuscript covering the whole of chapters 10 and 25. Uwe told me he knew what had happened to chapter 25. It had been published in Stern in 1983, on the 50th anniversary of the events it relates. No doubt the other chapter had been cannibalized similarly, but I was unable to find where it had been published. Luckily, my father's papers also contained a clumsy translation of the first third of the manuscript into English. It was written in an unidiomatic style through which one could almost hear the original German. I retranslated chapter 10 back into German from this source, completing the manuscript for publication. When the book appeared in Germany in the summer of 2000, it had an astonishing reception, received extremely positive reviews, and went straight to the top of the non-fiction bestseller list, where it stayed for 42 weeks. This completely confounded my expectations, and it was some time before I found a plausible explanation. Now I think it was because the book offers direct answers to two questions that Germans of my generation had been asking their parents since the war. How were the Nazis possible, and why didn't you stop them? The usual replies had been evasive. Frequently those questioned declared that they had known nothing until it was too late. My father's vivid account makes the rise of the Nazis psychologically comprehensible, and it shows how difficult resistance was, but it also demonstrates that it was plain from the outset what they stood for. Some Germans appear to have found that unpalatable, for a year after its publication, allegations began to appear in the press that the book had been assembled or modified after the war. At first, they were based on claimed anachronisms in the text. One by one, these claims were refuted. But then a more vicious attack appeared, asserting on the flimsiest grounds that the text had been extensively rewritten and engineered in the final years of my father's life in order to secure his posthumous reputation. It provoked a flood of articles in his defense. Nevertheless, the archives holding the original felt that the charge was too serious to ignore. They sent the manuscript to the German state forensic laboratories for analysis. After 2 months, during which they examined every page, the laboratories issued a report. It completely vindicated my father, confirming that the typescript had been entirely produced before the war and showed no signs of any later manipulation. Had my father really made any later changes, they would have been the opposite of those alleged by his critics. He would have toned the text down, removed some of the more personal passages, and generally lowered its temperature. He would, however, I am certain, not have revised his conclusions. I thought that would be the end of the excitement, and that the book was now settled in its final form. Then, in March 2002, a young historian, Jürgen Peter Schmidt, working on my father's papers in the German state archives, made two discoveries. The first was the complete manuscript of Chapter 25. My father had obviously just pushed it in a drawer with other papers when it was returned by Stern magazine. The second was really thrilling. It was a handwritten draft of 6 additional chapters, 35 to 40, which bring the manuscript to the 270 pages mentioned by my father. The manuscript now really is, I believe, in its final form, as my father abandoned it in 1939. Although still incomplete, the book also has a more satisfactory ending. Instead of the earlier final note of unreal bliss, it now concludes with a powerful close-up of Nazi methods in action. Oliver Pretzel.